Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show, and we are on a mission to ignite the entrepreneurial revolution right here in the hometown we love. And we do that in a couple ways. We tell great stories on this show. We tell the stories of winning. We tell the stories of how to succeed in business. And today we have somebody who has figured that out. We have Manveer Sandhu. He is the founder and CEO of Zenify. They're a fast-growing tech startup, and we're going to hear his story. There's a lot of nuggets in this one. If you are an early-stage entrepreneur or you're somebody who wants to be an entrepreneur, there's a lot of early-stage nuggets that will be shared because he's raised some money, and he's figured out a way. At the end of the show, though, stick around because I'll have some closing thoughts about the other way that we are igniting the entrepreneurial revolution. And it has to do with the Growth Factory and the Backyard Advantage. Stick around, my friends. And now it is my pleasure to introduce you to Manveer Sandhu. He is the founder of Zenify, a local tech. I won't even call you guys a startup. You guys have blown up, huh?
We've been growing. I think we're beyond the startup phase.
Yeah, I'm not going to call you guys a startup. You guys are blowing. You're an important piece of Sacramento's entrepreneurial ecosystem. Maybe we'll start a little bit about your business and your pathway to building Zenify.
Absolutely. So Zenify, you know, at the heart of it has always been around innovation, you know, leveraging technology to make an impact. So we're just riding this amazing wave that's happening where many organizations out there, be it health and life sciences, financial services, are all coming to the realization that they need data and tech to be a big part of their strategy. You know, they're calling it digital transformation. I call it more accelerated transformation. You know, COVID really, like, I would say was a huge catalyst, you know, with, you know, traditional brick and mortar locations shutting down. All of a sudden, it was this massive race to digitize the experience, you know, giving the consumer-like experience to people, you know, on their phones, but their infrastructure really wasn't ready for it, right? And so, you know, just going through that whole journey and having a partner that can help you kind of through that, choose the right technology, implement the right technology, and then drive the change. That's, we live at the heart of that.
Okay, so you're helping businesses go digital, if you will. And I know that a part of what you do has to do with Salesforce, which is a customer relations management company. But and that's, they're at the heart of helping people to provide best possible client experience.
Correct.
How do you work with them, and how integral of a piece of your business is the Salesforce platform?
Yeah, great question. So it's a very strategic alliance. It's a very strategic piece where we've essentially aligned our technical strategy based on their platform, right? So they're at the kind of center of it, primarily because it's easy to use. You know, technology is intimidating for people. So they've already sort of taken care of a lot of the intimidating parts and made it more seamless for people to, you know, onboard and get their system, use it. People love it. You know, generally users love the technology, right? And so we essentially go to market with them. They're actually an investor in us. So our seed investment round came from Salesforce Ventures. So we're very, like, strategically aligned.
Okay. So Salesforce, they're, for those that don't know, right, it's a software that businesses use to help communicate with their customers and help manage their customer service teams and sales teams and that kind of thing. Is your product more of a consultative type of product, or is it consulting, or do you actually have something that bolts on to Salesforce, the Salesforce platform?
So both.
Okay.
So, you know, generally speaking, these projects, these transformations are complex enough that the clients are going to have a challenge to do it on their own, right? Especially with the shortage of technical resources across the entire world, right? So they need that augmentation. They need that expertise to come in. So that's one piece of it. The second piece is there is proprietary technology and expertise that we bring to table that bolts on top or integrates with Salesforce to make the solution work.
Okay. How much is efficiency and driving the decisions with these clients? Because I can imagine, yes, we want to have the best possible client experience, but good employees are hard to find right now. And if we can put together automation that allows us to have people working on a more specialized type projects versus the mundane or processing type stuff.
Correct. So a lot of these organizations have these, you know, large back office teams, a lot of manual processes, you know, working across 8, 9, 10 applications, Excel spreadsheets, you name it. And the challenge with all that is it's not really scalable, right? So when you want to go acquire somebody, for example, or launch some brand new product as a company, you know, it's difficult because all this stuff kind of weighs you down, right? So even the heart of innovation, you need this productivity, right? You want to be able to allocate those resources to the right things in your core business, not, oh, now I've got to take half this money and invest it into infrastructure building. So it's nice having the technology and a company like us that can help with that side of it so they can focus on what their core mission is, right? So a lot of the banks, for example, there's massive M&A going on, even here, you know,
right.
Locally. With,
yeah, some consolidation.
Absolutely. And so in order to actually get the ROI on those mergers and acquisitions, you know, you want the technology side of it to be seamless. You don't want that to kind of weigh you down.
Okay.
And that's happening. The reality is it can weigh things down.
Not everybody uses Salesforce, though. What happens when you have two companies, maybe you're putting them together, or maybe even there's a client that's using one of the other CRMs? Do you just turn them away? You get them hooked over to Salesforce? How does that work?
So generally, we would like for them to move to the Salesforce platform. It definitely makes things easier. That being said, sometimes in a complex organization, these things can coexist. So you might have a Microsoft in there. They might be using AWS, right? They might be using Azure. And so where we've elevated our own offering is that we've figured out ways for these things to coexist because the client can't just rip everything out and start over brand new, as much as Salesforce or whoever would love that. The reality is it's not practical, right? So part of our value is let's figure out how we get the best usage of everything that you have and let's figure out how it can work together, right? Yeah. And that is, it's challenging for them to figure out on their own. And so we add that value.
So when you go into a business, are you talking to typically a CEO or maybe somebody in charge of IT? What aspect, what's the job title that you're dealing with?
Often it's the CIO.
Okay.
Sometimes these initiatives are born out of, again, an actual business need. You know, there's a merger happening or there's a massive marketing campaign. So sometimes even the CMO is the driver, you know, that's the executive sponsor of the initiative, but the CIO may play a big role in the getting it done part, right? Mm. So it varies, you know, but it's typically CIO or CEO, sometimes even COO. Right. The operations guy.
Right. Right. Okay. So I'm going to backtrack off of your business for a moment and let's talk because I'm always curious is people's pathway to entrepreneurship. How did you decide to be an entrepreneur? And was there a trigger or did you always know?
I didn't always know. In fact, I was at the same company for 19 years. Right. So I played sports. I played football, you know, all my life through college. And, you know, I'm a team guy. You know, I'm all about like, how do we like win? But I'm also a tech guy, right? And so at some point, you need to be at an organization that supports both, right? I want to win and I want technology to be front and center. And if that isn't working, then things get out of balance, right? And so at my former employer, that's essentially what happened. The last few years, you know, I'm thinking cutting edge and pushing the envelope, whereas the organization is a big organization. It's moving slowly. So eventually, the two paths didn't align and I was let go, right? Mm. As part of that whole experience. So we had to kind of start the company to some extent out of survival, right? Like it was the passion that we already had. And we said, look, I could either commute to the Bay Area now and go work for Salesforce, right? Mm-hmm. And be on the road and away from my kids, or I can enjoy the cost of living that we have out here, at least, you know, back then in 2013, and like try to get this thing going and actually make it happen. So it was literally out of like survival that we kind of.
Well, it's interesting that you, okay, so you're, I wonder how isolated your type of story is where you have, you know, a lot, our biggest employer in the region is, you know, the government, right? All these government entities and not as known for being innovative. Yet we have innovative people.
Yeah,
they're everywhere. Just because you're from Sacramento doesn't mean you don't want to push the envelope and be real creative and be a driving force behind the use of technology, let's call it. And so what do those people do, right? We can go to the Bay Area, but even there, I'm not going to pick any names, but big companies move slower by and large.
Yep, absolutely.
You can't be alone in that.
No, not at all. And I think that the paradigm in the past, I'd say, when I say past, pre-pandemic, is that you're kind of locked in, especially out here in Sacramento. Even when we've recruited experienced professionals here at Sacramento, we wanted them to come to Zenify. This was one of the things that we were up against is the individual super talented, but is like, well, you know, I've got this family and this house and this mortgage and this is the best I'll ever get here. It's super stable. And I think a lot of the government workers think the same way. And so it's their security net. And it's like, I don't want to take a chance with this startup thing because I may not be employable again. Well, holy moly, just think about that. That's like a different world, because right. Now all of a sudden it's like there's way more demand than talent, right? And you're seeing people even at the public sector level going, do I really care about that pension? Is it
right.
Is it that critical? I gotta, at the end of the day, I gotta live. I gotta, you know, I gotta go to work. I gotta enjoy. And so
shouldn't I be in an inspired environment?
Totally. I think disruption is happening right and left, where you're seeing people that were lifers maybe like revisit things and go, you know what? I can take this chance. You know, some of it's the work from home. You know, you don't need to travel, go to the office, these things. So it's made it, I think, easier for people to reevaluate their situation and go, you know what? I'm going to chase that dream. We've even lost people at my company, right? Like several, you know, one wants to go be a musician. The other one wants to start his own gig. And it's fascinating. You know,
yeah. People are, yeah, as a society, we're rethinking our life choices. I feel like Sacramento in many ways has been the beneficiary of that. And especially here in the suburbs. I know you live in the Roseville area. I live out here in Placer County as well. And I know the people in El Dorado Hills, you know, we're getting, with the work from home movement happening, people are saying, I want to live somewhere where I can have a yard and, you know, maybe a little bit different kind of quality of life versus mm-hmm. being right there in the city, really close to the office.
Yep.
But you've gotten recognized for being a great CEO with the Business Journal, one of the most admired CEOs. You've been recognized for building a great culture at Zenify, among other things. Maybe talk to us a little bit about that. Why? And maybe even how getting these recognition, and then how has the pandemic challenged you to maintain or mm-hmm. continue to grow a great culture, for example?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's a great question. I think a lot of what we've done is actually similar to, you know, Mark, your organization. It starts with your own passion, right? And the fact that you're doing a lot of philanthropic things. At the end of the day, you're running a business as well. And these are things that you care about. Right? It showcases your values. It's very similar for us. You know, a lot of the work we're doing stems from our passion and the things that we care about, right? As people, you know, not just as a CEO, not just as a employee of Zenify, but, you know, I care about this cause. You know, I care about creating jobs. I care about giving people opportunities that maybe ordinarily they wouldn't have had, right? Because I don't care if they have a college degree. You know, those things just don't matter to me. They don't matter to us. What matters more is, are you a hard worker? Are you gritty? You know, what are the things that move you at the end of the day? And we put that stuff front and center. We don't put it behind the scene, you know, and mm-hmm. we don't just do it with words. We do it with our actions. And so that attracts a certain type of person, right? And when enough of these people get together and they like each other, they like the person they're working with, you know, they care about similar things. And we'll even bring out some of the, you know, personal things. This is what's crazy. You know, you mentioned the pandemic. There's technology like Slack, for example, which is a great platform to take what would have been, you know, in-person conversations and as best as possible digitize it in a very easy, cool, convenient way. So we're talking sports, we're talking food, we're talking, you know, grilling and smoking, barbecues. And so all of this is happening now.
You can have like the talk at the water cooler through Slack.
Correct.
Yeah.
Absolutely.
And because what I've heard is, what did I hear the other day that was sort of interesting? You can't motivate by, I can't remember the, through megabytes or something. I've lost the quote now, but basically inspiring your teammates and building real chemistry and real creativity, it's harder to do through Zoom or Slack. Yep. And there really is not a substitute mm-mm. for face-to-face. That's what I've been hearing. So
generally I think it's true. And I think the way to kind of overcome some of that anyway is again, it's like, how would it be in person? What would you talk about? Would everything be like structured like a meeting? One of the problems with like Zoom is, sure, I can see you, but this thing was structured as a meeting. So it feels like work, right? So you have to kind of be more natural and ad hoc about it. Like happy hours, for mm-hmm. example, are wonderful ways to get people together. There's no agenda. You know, there's no topic. There's no action item we got to address. We're just talking about things that we like, that we're passionate about.
Are you doing that online?
Yeah, we're doing Slack or Zoom, absolutely. Yeah. That being said, we have our offices, and what's happened with our offices, interestingly enough, like Sacramento here, it's actually become the destination for the rest of the company to go, you know, like they can't go here, they can't go there, they can't do this. We'll come to the office because we set the office up a lot like your office here. You know, there's nice amenities on site, so we don't have to go to a restaurant and deal with the, you know, putting on your mask and, you know, all these things you got to deal with that makes it like not that fun to go. Right. So we've kind of created that here, and we said, look, if you want to, if you're dying to get out of your house, right, and you want to meet with somebody, come here. This is your new, you know, convention center.
Yeah, I love it. Yeah.
Right.
Come hang out. I know, yeah, even one of our mutual friends, Andrew Gardner, who is one of the co-founders of Humanly. I know he likes to hang out at your place a little bit because you basically said, come on over if you know, utilize what we have.
Absolutely.
In a generous way.
And it creates, you know, they're an innovative firm, you know, and it creates those water cooler conversations. You know, there's, you know, folks from my side talking to folks from his side, and you never know when you get, you know, some of the nerds together, you know, like crazy stuff happens, mm-hmm. and you got to kind of have an environment to foster some of that. So yeah, I'm very open to that. I mean, I was the last person to want to shut the office down and the first one to want to open it up. Right. And no disrespect to the medical side of things, right? Like, it's not that I'm saying that like this thing wasn't real or anything. It's just, I do feel that there's a human side of people being stuck at home, you know, and the mental health, I could see the mental health things brewing. And so I've been big on like, you know, let's do what we need to do then, right? Like, let's push the envelope a little bit. We'll stick to the CDC guidelines, but it's like, guys, like, you know, we're human beings at the end of the day.
Yeah, our mental health is quite important as well. But what do you think in terms of like the trend, right? We've all moved to a hybrid workforce than when it was a requirement to show up by, you know, a certain time every day and stay till a certain time. Now it's hybrid. It feels like it is not coming back because people are just loving it. Is that an advantage for you or a disadvantage?
Ooh, great question. I think generally as a firm, it's an advantage for me personally. Like, you know, if you ask Manveer what I would prefer, you know, it's a disadvantage because I feed off that energy and seeing people, you know, I like, and it's not just that sunk cost I have, you know, on that lease. And that
office. You have to build it. Yeah.
Right. But it's, you know, I feed off that energy and people's personalities and connecting. So I think what we're going to have to do, and I think other organizations have to do, is you're going to have to be creative about how do you create then more event-based, you know, things that bring people together. Because I think what's happened is people are creatures of habit. And they've gotten used to their habitats of like, oh, I work from home. I get the people that have that massive inconvenience of like the commute, parking. I get it. It makes total practical sense. You know, why would I waste that 2 hours? That's 2 hours of productivity. And so that use case aside, you know, people that can easily get there, I think you have to really highlight the value of it, right? Besides the beer that we have in the mm-hmm. fridge, which helps too, by the way. But, you know, the innovation that can happen, the collaboration, I think people have lost sight of some of that, you know?
Yeah. It feels to me, and this is just a hypothesis, that big companies, let's call it Facebook, or these big companies where the employees tend to have all this leverage, they're saying, we're not coming back on the end of the office, and basically kind of holding the company hostage, that they're just sort of, they like their work from mm-hmm. Granite Bay type of lifestyle. I'll go into Facebook and, you know, show up once in a while and do the minimum, but I can switch jobs, go to Google, or you know, I'll go to get to work for a tech startup or something. You can't make me show up every day, and I've already moved to Granite Bay. Mm-hmm. It makes me sort of wonder, are those bigger companies going to lose their edge over time, right? They've got all this power now, but over time, where the real innovation was already happening is in smaller companies and in many times innovative startups, the powers might get shifted a little bit to the more innovative small companies.
I would agree. Yeah, I think they're going to lose some of their edge. The flip side, though, Mark, that's interesting that we've gone through here is Sacramento, as you and I both know, was this like hidden gem of talent, right? Like that was the primary reason I chose Sacramento was awesome technical talent I was finding. And I felt like we had that kind of secret advantage for a while. With the pandemic, one of the things that's happened that I think benefits the big companies, especially like the Bay Area big tech, is they've discovered Sacramento. They've discovered the mid-market cities, you know, and now they're going, well, why was I in this talent war in the Bay Area where Google and Facebook were, you know, battling to go get that Stanford grad or whoever, you know, paying $300,000 a year. They started to figure out that, wow, you know, there's incredible talent, you know, in Nashville and in Sacramento and Boise, and they're starting to figure that out, right?
Yeah.
And so, like, as much as there's a disadvantage of them losing some of that in person that they used to have, they're actually starting to find talent in different places across the country. So it's an interesting debate, right?
Yeah. Now that is interesting. So in terms of that, and I don't know if you have how deep your knowledge is on where the talent actually is. Mine is not so deep. You mentioned Nashville and Sacramento and obviously some of these other smaller towns that aren't as known for their talent. Mm-hmm. What about in the middle of the Midwest and just like, are they finding talent out there in Omaha, Nebraska?
They are, and a lot of it is, it's a self-fulfilling thing as people started to move from the big cities to those cities, it's become a catalyst, right?
Right.
And so everything's becoming disrupted at this point, you know, where I don't know how they go back to that environment that they had before. You know, it's going to have to be a different version of it. Like I was saying earlier, maybe it's event-based, team-based things where people are traveling back. You're not just, it's not the everyday person commuting in. You know, I've worked my shift here, I'm coming home. It's going to be a different type of environment, you know, especially everyone's more distributed at this point. Yeah. So it's super interesting. I think Sacramento as a whole has benefited from this. We've obviously had people move here, you know, and so there's like more people with jobs here. And so I think that's good. Where it becomes a little challenging is inflation, right? That's been something that like we have seen here that is
home prices escalating rapidly.
And even salaries, you know.
So
part of, again, before you kind of had this sort of cost of living, you know, tied to Sacramento was different than, you know, the rest of the country. And generally, like what you pay in the Bay Area is different than what you pay here for even a resource. And that's been disrupted a bit as well, right? And so startups, one of the challenges startups are going to have to find, like when we were, you know, in our early phases, if I had to pay what I had to pay now, it'd be very difficult, you know? So startups are going to have to get more creative, a little more grittier to figure out how to do these things. You know, how do I, in those early phases, you know, right? Like you've got to make that dollar stretch, right? And so that's going to be a little bit of a challenge. I hope things start to settle down a bit because it can't just keep going up and up and up, right? Like there's got to be a counter factor economically at some point that makes things come back to earth a bit, right?
Yeah, I agree. I have thoughts on that, but I want to dive in maybe lessons for our entrepreneurial friends out there. Maybe we've been talking a little bit about startups, and you've gone past that phase a little bit, but you know, after several years working in more of a corporate environment, then you jump into into a startup and you've had success. Is there anything that surprised you? Any lessons learned in that Zenify journey?
You know, I tell you what, Shark Tank is incredible, right? And you watch it, it's entertaining. And there's things that you watch and you learn from Shark Tank that if Shark Tank didn't exist, I probably would have been more surprised. Like one of the main things I hear on Shark Tank is you hear the sharks tell the entrepreneurs, hey, you're too early. You're coming to us too early. Like you need to prove it more. You need to, you know, generate a bit more revenue, generate a bit more of X, Y, right? And I had that as an advantage early on, knowing that before I go approach an investor, I've got to be at a certain level. You know, like we've got to be gritty. We've got to be resourceful. We've got to be creative. We've got to find a way to get the business to a certain level before you get to the investor, right? And so that's been, I guess the only surprise is like, it's even more relevant than I thought it was, right? Because people want to know, it's amazing. Even as I go to win a new client, oh, show me the 10 other logos. And you're like, in the back of your head, you're going, I just got started. We just started. How would I show you 10 logos, right?
Yeah.
But that's what they expect because they're, you know, spending their money. They want to know that dollar is, you know, going to be secure and it's going to have that return on investment. So you have to be very resourceful and creative with how you showcase that. Yeah, I have the expertise, but I don't have the book of business that you want to see, right? Because I just got going. And if that's the way it really was, and startups would never get going, you'd always be told, Well, you're not there yet. You're not there yet.
Yeah. You know, we started something called the Growth Factory, which is an accelerator, startup accelerator with an accompanying venture fund and a Backyard Advantage. And the Backyard Advantage really is the leaders of Sacramento rallying together around these startups. But what we're hoping to do is bring these leaders together to help get some of those logos, maybe some of that early traction, especially for B2B companies that, you know, it's tough to get those first few customers. And if we could get the corporations around Sacramento to give early startups a look, at least, hey, so what we're trying to do is say, hey, let us get, maybe we'll help you get you to third base. We can't guarantee you an order. If you don't, if your product's not ready for a corporation to buy it or spend some money at this time, let's get some feedback and you can go back and get it closer. But maybe we can take some of that friction out of getting to the right person that, you know, can help give that feedback.
It's huge. I love that you guys are doing that. And I think you can get creative with some of that too, because yeah, I mean, maybe there's a way to not price it, you know, like to discount it, because having that logo, it's not even necessarily just the revenue you might get from that potential client. It's the fact that, you know, you have a logo and a success story, right? There's a huge amount of
have a user that's in a testimonial. Yeah,
absolutely. Yeah, it's awesome that you guys are doing that.
Yeah. I think Sacramento, I mean, I think we're so lucky to have companies like yours here in Sacramento, tech startups that have actually got, you know, made great progress. You guys you're a great example of what's possible. And I feel like that success, your success, it breeds other success. People listening now are going, man, Veer did it. Mm-hmm. He seemed like just an ordinary guy. Maybe I can do it too. No, I'm not. Totally. I'm just kidding. But but they start to believe in themselves a little bit more when they see people like yourself. Oh, he was just a guy that worked for HP for a lot of years.
Yep.
Wow. You know, I'm sure people are listening to this going, okay, wait a minute. I've got an idea. Mm-hmm. And that to me is what is happening in Sacramento right now. Thanks to you and others like you that are, you know, took the risk, you know, was there ever a time in the early stages where you got, super concerned that maybe it wasn't going to work or anything, that the business wasn't going to make it?
Cause we started in a pretty complex space in health and life sciences, and it's a wonderful market. You know, there's an incredible amount of transformation that's happening. I mean, just think about wearables and different things that are going to happen over time, proactive healthcare, medicine. And so we started in that market. Like we our first successful project was actually in Haiti. And it was a project around, you know, vaccine refrigerator temperature monitoring. This is like, you know, 9 years ago, and after the earthquake in Haiti, and, you know, there was a massive breakout of tuberculosis and cholera, and they had a vaccine spoilage problem, and we solved it. We utilized the cloud, we utilized Salesforce, we utilized IoT. So we were very early, you know, and so we were born with innovation. We thought, oh, we're gonna take on the world now, right? Like, we've done this thing, and lo and behold, there's bureaucracy. You know, there's all these things we just talked about. Well, show me all your success stories. You know, how many people do you have? What's your bench look like? And you're just like, there's like two of us, right? And so we would run into things that would be frustrating, because you're like, look, I know how to solve your problem. Like, you know, I know it. We have the technology, but it's not enough sometimes, right? They, you know, there's more layers to go through.
So yeah, big challenge is getting the first customers.
Absolutely. Yeah. You know, and even we were doing public sector work here in the state of California. We had some early success, but it was really challenging, you know, where we're coming to the table with innovation and the state is still kind of several years behind, right? And while they talk about being agile and being innovative, you know, the practicality of actually getting it done was way more painful than we had anticipated. We lost almost $500,000 on one deal with the state, right? Through that. Yeah, it was very challenging. Almost put us under, you know, and you just hit a few breaks here and there that you get a little creative, and you find a way to get through that, but you learn a lot through that journey. You know, like, you know, as much as the dream and the passion is important, there's just components of getting business done and deals done that you have to go through it to understand. You know what I mean?
Yeah. One of the things, so you decided, you took the route as an entrepreneur of going out and raising some money. But Salesforce, it seems like an easier type decision because of how strategic they could be in helping you. So taking their investment, I mean, I would think like all day long, that's a good one.
Yeah.
But when you think about raising money and all the different pros and cons associated with how much to take in and how you shareholders might get diluted and, mm-hmm. and so on. I mean, how do you approach that? And especially as you look at the your longer term, your time horizon.
Yeah, I think what's key is, you know, my advice to startups is if you're not a strong finance person, I have a finance background, right? I studied accounting and finance. I did finance for many years. So I know how to model, right? I know how to project. I know how to factor in, you know, all the different possibilities and scenarios of things that can happen. And I understand gross margin and EBITDA and all those things, right? And they're not brain surgery, but they're very important tools to know as the leader of the company or have a leader in the company that knows, you know, how to do some of those things. And so you got to take a longer term vision of the business and go, okay, if this is where we are today, you know, based on these moves we want to make, whatever those moves are, you know, you can sort of model the cost side of things and then you can do your revenue projections and you can kind of see like, what does valuation look like over time? You know, what does the cash flow look like over time? And we tend to underestimate everything. You know, we tend to underestimate how much it's going to cost. Mm. You know, we tend to underestimate how difficult it's going to be to get those revenue dollars. So you got to have some buffers in there. And what you'll start to conclude over time is like, I can grit this out for a while, which we did. You know, we grit, how many years? 6 years of, you know, just using our own resources and going through all the trials and tribulations, right? To where we've had, in our viewpoint, proven ourselves to go get a legitimate, you know, seed investment of, it was around $2 million. So you have to go through that. But then you also have to have a good model of where you want to go and where you're going, right? And that'll give you a sense of like, okay, if I do it the way I'm doing it, I'm going to have to catch all these breaks and it's going to take potentially way longer than if I can get that funding. You know what I mean? And I wish sometimes we'd have got that funding even earlier than we got it in 2019. I wish we would have got it back in maybe 2015. So there is an acceleration that you have to trade off dilution with how fast.
Missing the window of opportunity.
Exactly. Yeah. You could miss, you know, and especially if it's technology, you know, like you could miss and somebody else, you know, innovates and scoops up that market. So you have to kind of time it right. You got to have some faith that like, yeah, you know, the investors obviously got to be the right fit in so many different ways, you know, culturally, strategically, they add value. It's not just money, right? Because there's dumb money, there's smart money. So you have to evaluate those things as well. But that model is super important and you have to keep revisiting it, keep tweaking it, keep changing it. You don't just do it once and then it's over.
Yeah. So if you are not the financial person, put that person in your life so you can do some scenarios and step back in big picture. I think a lot of times we get caught up in just the nitty gritty of survival or, you know, getting the first customers and, you know, stepping back and working on the business. It's tough to do, you know, like building the airplane while you're trying to fly it. Totally. It's a tough thing to do. Entrepreneurship's not for everybody, but nobody builds a truly great company alone.
Correct.
So great advice.
That's made it easier is this concept of these fractional resources. You know, back in the day, maybe we call them contractors or whatever. But the fractional model is really interesting too for startups now because committing full time to that CFO or that CMO or whatever that C level is, expensive, big commitment, they may not work out. So there are these interesting fractional models that are popping up. And like a lot of the work that you guys are doing through Growth Factory, in some ways, it is another version of that, right? Because you're getting people's expertise for these like shorter durations and just that magical 4 hours that you get from that person is like gold.
It is. It's amazing. We have a few fractional CMO or CFO types, both actually. We have marketing people, we got finance people, and these people are donating their time. They all have businesses, but the one thing that comes to mind is there are some people that are better at modeling for a venture backable startup than maybe a small business like a restaurant or something like that. There's a there's a level. A CPA is a CPA is a CPA is not really true, right? Mm-hmm. Just because you have a finance background doesn't mean you can put the thoughts together of what a fast growth startup might look like and the different things that go on in terms of modeling out, your financial situation.
Yeah, you're right.
So having the right ones, and I think that's part of what, you know, if talking to somebody like you who has been there, done that, the Growth Factory people, we're trying to match up the sort of the best of the best by category. And these are things I've seen people make mistakes by taking advice from just people that probably shouldn't be advising on that topic in that way. And so really, that is a huge thing. So think about who you put in your life to help you is as important as just the decision to put somebody in your life, because the wrong person can steer you down the wrong path. So it could run you out of business. So thinking about that, other advice for startups. So other thoughts. I love the education piece. For anybody who might be listening that's thinking, okay, well, I'm in the trenches. What else should I know? Like, let's say I've got some of my found. I'm invested into, well, the Growth Factory is invested into 15 companies. I'm invested into like 50 or so, all local. Some of them listen to the show. But there's so many others in our network that love to learn from people who act like yourself that are actually doing it, have done it.
Yeah.
Thoughts?
Yeah, the other transition. Let's think about transition. In the beginning, in the startup phase, you do everything on your own. You're the multi-tool. You know, when you don't know the answer, you Google it. You find somebody that might know the answer. And it's a great way to be resourceful, creative, and make it through those early phases, right? But then you hit these milestones in tiers where it's like, is it time to hire a sales rep, right? Is it time to hire a full-time marketing professional? People go through these tiers all the time. And the where you got to be careful is, you know, the answer isn't, oh, just go find the greatest person out there, you know, put a rec out, bring them in. You know, it's really understand what is it that you're trying to do, you know, and then ask questions. Somebody that's built a sales team before, you know, what's the difference between the hunter and the farmer and the inside sales rep versus a field sales rep? How do you structure these plans, right? And so this information is available. You know, you got to do your own research, you know, network, connect, do the due diligence to go through those things, because what I see folks do from time to time, we still don't have a CFO. I'm our acting CFO. Many, many times during the course, we could have hired a CFO. I'm still debating with my investors, that's like the first hire they want me to make is hire a CFO.
Right.
I get it. I know why they think that, right? I'm not saying they're wrong, but I'm still evaluating it. What would the CFO bring to the table, you know? And they're like, well, you know, in the future, mergers and acquisitions. And it's like, okay. So you want to bring in a person that's got this big title. In the event that we do some big event down the road, when we have, again, fractional CFOs that are out there that have expertise on that type of transaction, which is who I hired, by the way, to do your transaction. And they're just quiet going, exactly. If that CFO, I'm going to spend so much time with that person, isn't a cultural fit, you know, if they just come in and disrupt everything, then this thing's not going to work.
Plus, you got to pay them a lot of money. Plus, I mean, you can have the fractional CFO can be a fraction of the cost.
Absolutely. So, you know, I think there's just a level of due diligence. You know, it's like people, I think, get I've heard stories of people, like part of the dilution effect is they feel they need all that cash to make these big hires, you know, and all of a sudden, yeah, you've got a smaller percentage of the company and you're struggling to even spend that money, by the way, because you're like, well, I thought I needed this C-level, that C-level, you know, I'm not saying that people to do it traditionally are wrong. It's just that there's a level of like due diligence and analysis and question asking you need to do before you just jump to make those big moves, because those are the things that you can get overstretched really early, you know, or overcapitalize early and over dilute. And so it's, you know, you have to understand the progression, you know, what resources are truly essential when, you know, that are going to get you to that next phase.
Yeah. One of the things we talk about in the Growth Factory, and most people have heard this, what's important now? Because I think the biggest decision we make is, what am I going to do with what I got? Let's step back from the situation, and what do I got? I've got these resources. I've got these strengths. How am I going to put them in position to move the ball forward? And what's important right now? You know, not 4 years from now necessarily.
Sure. It's huge. Another thing that has been an interesting debate amongst, you know, my own leadership team, different people I talk to, is this notion that you have to know your exit plan, and that if you don't know your exit plan, you know, then you can't really build your strategy. In other words, you should build your whole strategy based on how you're going to exit. And I thought a lot about that, and I was like, okay, I mean, let me think, you know, okay, how does that really work? And the more I thought about it, I'm like, I don't think it makes sense at all, actually, because I get it. You may think that you want to sell to this company, for example, And I'm not saying that you should be blind to that. Yeah, they should be mindful of that. But if you focus too much on that, what it's going to do, in my viewpoint, is it's going to like kill the different possibilities that could happen, right? Maybe you should focus more on building a kick-ass company that's got this incredible value that's differentiated and this incredible culture that people want to be part of, right? And you've got market share, you know, other metrics that are important. Yeah, and your revenue's off the chart. If I'm good at, if I have these, if I built this killer firm that's driving innovation, it's winning customers, and people are happy, Glassdoor reviews are great, people say, I think there's going to be more than that one company that might be interested, in possibly acquiring us, right? I think that there'll be a lot of possibilities. And one of the beauties with the investor we just recent one that we took the seed or the Series A with, is they were one of the first ones that were like, why not IPO? Because in my head, I didn't think it was something that we could do, right? Because we're a certain type of company maybe. And there were one of the things that struck me in that conversation with them when we first met is, why couldn't you go IPO? And I was like, okay. So going back to the exit thing, right?
Mm-hmm.
Imagine if all we did was just focus on this one outcome, and what type of company would we be, right? I guarantee you we wouldn't be doing some of the things we're doing right now. Like, there's doors opening, there's things that are happening now that even 2 months ago weren't even on the table, which is crazy, right? So it's like, you gotta be open to that, yeah. And you gotta build the company, in my viewpoint, based on things that matter, right? Obviously in this market we're in, talent matters. What does talent care about? They care about, what are the company's values? What are my growth opportunities? Where's this company going? Not how are they going to exit?
Right.
You know what I mean?
But I think it's really important for the CEO specifically to be able to share the vision in a compelling way.
Yeah.
So maybe for our audience a little bit, share the Zenify vision so that we are inspired to be rooting for you. Where are you guys going with this?
So I think technology will continue to be front and center for us, the innovation side of things. The strength of the company is within our technical team, always has been, right? And when I look at what we bring to the table for our customers, which is, they're all going through this journey of trying to accelerate their business growth or whatever moves, and the technologies is right now, it's bringing them down, right? It's a impeding progress. And our vision is that we are part of that continual acceleration. Like, no, technology is actually going to be your advantage, right? Mm. And you can buy it, consume it, deploy it in a way where it's not stressful. It goes into the brand name. So the Zenify brand name, the origins of it, right, are all around balance, right? Bringing calm to the chaos. There's a statistic.
Oh, Zen. The word Zen is the root word of Zenify. Okay, right. I didn't catch that till right now.
Yeah, that's the thought process. There's two versions of this. One version is the version from the client's perspective, where 70 to 80% of these complex digital transformations fail statistically. You can Google that, by the way.
Mm.
So if you knew that, which CIOs do, then there's a lot of anxiety and there's a lot of stress when you're taking on this major initiative, right? What technology you select, right? What person internally you put on point to run that massive project, the partner you select, the consulting firm, all these things are, it's all trust, risk. So the idea with Zenify is that, look, we know that it's complex. We know that there's going to be moments of stress, but we can actually do this, and we can do this in style. We can actually enjoy the journey and enjoy the ride, because even the concept of tech consulting, historically anyway, has this perception that, we're going to grind people, they're going to be traveling X percentage of the time, they're going to get burned out in a few years. People love consulting. I love the rush of it, but people only last a few years because eventually they burn out, and they can't handle it. Again, the idea behind Zenify is, no, let's disrupt that paradigm, right? The vision is you can actually enjoy all the things that you love about technology and consulting and helping people, but you can actually have a great experience doing it. You can enjoy it. Does that mean that there's never going to be stress and then you're not going to run into some tough situations? No, of course you are. But we as a firm are going to commit to the idea that we're going to support you. We're going to give you flexibility. We're going to give you tools. We're going to do different things to make that an experience that you can sustain, and you don't have to give that up to go take an easier job because it's, X or Y. So that is the vision, in a sense, from a client perspective and an employee perspective. And we just need to keep that going, right?
Wow. Well,
does that make sense?
It does. Well, we're lucky to have you, and you definitely, I think, shared a lot to the entrepreneurial community today, and we're lucky to have you, so fortunate to have people of your caliber, of your level of accomplishment, generous with your time to help others. Any closing thoughts that you want to leave our audience with, or are you ready to wrap?
Just, you know, one last thing is when I was talking about culture and people and, you know, enjoying their time at work, you know, and we were talking about things going virtual versus being in the office. I mean, I think my advice is just don't underestimate how much people care about what you care about, right? And that they, you know, the things we collectively care about or are passionate about, right? There, like the separation of work and home, maybe before people going into the office, it was more distinct. The lines are blurring, and you could view that as a negative in a way, because that's part of the reasons people are stressing when they're working from home is they don't know how to turn it off. It feels like it's always there. And we've all got to get better at that and figure that part out. But one of the interesting positives is that it has brought people's lives, you know, their personal lives into the workplace. Because now you're bringing your kids into the video and you see dogs and yes. These things before were like, oh, why are you bringing that up? You know, it's like, no, this is part of the experience now, right? Let's talk about what you did over the weekend. Let's talk about that vacation that you're taking and why you're so passionate about that particular thing. I think these are really important things that make the work experience more enjoyable for all of us, right? And I wouldn't underestimate that. I think that's one of the big positives of this whole madness that we're in.
I love it. Manveer, thank you for sharing your story. Thanks for the education, and I look forward to knowing you better.
Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You bet.
I love everything you guys are doing.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Yes, this is the Mark Haney Show. We are back with some closing thoughts. Great show today. Manveer, I think, knocked it out of the park. His business is killing it. And that's what can happen if you are a successful startup. You can figure out a way to change the world. And that's what we're working on here at the Growth Factory. We're helping early stage startups to get that early traction. We're providing some early capital in there. We are giving them some guidance as we run them through the Growth Factory Bootcamp Accelerator Program. But we're also providing them with the Backyard Advantage, which is really a unique offering. Nobody else is doing this. Nobody else is offering the funding and the other things, the boot camp, plus the leaders of Sacramento have come together to help us, right? And that's the Backyard Advantage. It's these leaders. So if you want to be a part of the Growth Factory in any way, shape, or form, hit me up at the Mark Haney or go to thegrowthfactory.us and let's figure out a way to get together if you want to help ignite the entrepreneurial revolution on our team as well. So for all you out there fighting the good fight for our freedom, for our security, and our way of life, and of course, all you out there fighting the good fight for entrepreneurship, we're never above you. We're never below you. We're always by your side. segment includes the personal knowledge, experiences, and opinions about angel investing by seasoned angel investors. This content is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as legal, tax, investment, or financial advice. Nothing in the segment constitutes a solicitation, recommendation, or endorsement.